Okay, we are going to continue our study in 1 Timothy, but what I don't want you to do is I don't want you to open your Bible yet. So, Matt, I saw you trying to sneak a peek. All right, so we are on to 1 Timothy chapter 3, and in 1 Timothy chapter 3 we have qualifications for elders and qualifications for deacons. And it wasn't that long ago that we went through this, so we're going to have a little exercise and see how many of the qualifications we can remember. So I'll write them up on the board, and I have cheated because I have the list, but actually I'll just write whatever you tell me, we'll write up here, okay? So,
you want to keep them separate?
No, not necessarily. Valita, what'd you say?
Married,
okay. Okay. I heard another one. We got all the ones we talk about all the time. That's what we've got.
One who has his house in subjection.
All right. John, I don't want any answers from you, okay? Because you probably know him better than the rest of us. Well, we got what? 10? Almost 10? Can we think of more?
I think Jan said temperate.
Temperate, okay.
I've got striker. Not a striker.
Okay. I'll say we'll talk about that today, but not in context with elders. Any others that we can think of?
Gentle.
Okay. All right, well, we're close. Let's go ahead and, with the exception of double tongue, which is specific to deacons, I believe. I think all of those are correct. But why don't we go to 1 Timothy chapter 3. And let's just read the first 7 verses, if someone would do that for us. 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 through 7.
This is a faithful saying. If a man desires the position of a bishop, he desires a good work. A bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife, temperate, sober-minded, of good behavior, hospitable, able to teach, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but gentle, not quarrelsome, nor covetous. One who rules his own house well, having his children in submission with all reverence, for if a man does not know how to rule his own house, how will he take care of the church of God? Not a novice, lest being puffed up with pride he fall into the same condemnation as the devil. Moreover, he must have a good testimony among those who are outside, lest he fall into the reproach and the snares of the devil.
All right. Thanks, Bob. We did pretty good. So, kind of running through the list. So, the first, we missed the first one, right? And that was blameless. Right? We didn't make that one.
But the first one is he has to desire.
Okay, so we're going to talk about that first. I'm of the opinion that that's not a qualification, but we'll talk about that in a minute. Blameless, Husband of one wife, we got that. Temperate, we got sober-minded. We didn't get it. Good behavior, missed it. Hospitable, got it. Able to teach, got it. Not given to wine, got it. Not violent. I believe that... I'm trying to remember which is translated brawler in the Old King James. I think that's violent. Not greedy for money, we missed that one. Gentle, we got. Not
greedy.
Oh, I did write not greedy. Oh, yep, you're right. Thanks, Bob. Gentle, not quarrelsome. I'm not sure. Again, that might be not a striker. Not covetous. One who rules the house.
Well, we got that.
Children, we got that. And, not a novice. We missed that one. Good testimony. We got it. So we did pretty good. We missed a few. Alright, so let's start in verse 1. And let's address the question that Mike had. And that is, must a man desire the position, desire to be an elder, to serve as an elder? And when I read the verse here, when it says, this is a faithful saying, if a man desires the position of a bishop, he desires a good work. Maybe we should pause for a second. We know that in the New Testament, there are four words that all represent the same obligations in the church. Elder, what are the others? Bishop, that's one that's mentioned here. What are the other two?
Presbyter,
overseer, shepherd, presbyter is translated something else. Is that overseer? All of those are representing the same office, the same responsibilities that we're talking about here in 1 Timothy chapter 3. And here it calls it bishop, but that's what it is. It's the office of an elder. So here's the question. If a man desires the position of a bishop, he desires a good work. Now, when I read that, I don't read that it's a qualification. But what else do we know about this topic? Well, where else might we find commentary about elders? So we know 1 Timothy chapter 3 is one place we can look for qualifications. Where else can we look for qualifications?
Peter.
Okay, Peter and Titus. Those are the three places. Let's go to Peter. 1 Peter chapter 5. Someone read verses... let's just read verse 2. Actually, verses 1 and 2. Let's read verses 1 and 2.
Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ...
Hold on. 1 Peter chapter 5. Verses 1 and 2.
The elders here among you I exhort, I who am a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, and also partaker of the glory that will be revealed, shepherd the flock of God which is among you, serving as overseers, not by compulsion, but willingly, not for dishonest gain, but eagerly.
All right, and he continues on. So, I'll just tell you where I kind of fall on this, is that when I read 1 Timothy chapter 3, I see that it's a good thing for a man to desire to be an elder. But I also think that we could find ourselves in situations where a man might not desire that position, but understands that it's within the best interest of the church for him to serve in that position. But yet he doesn't need to do it, as Peter says, by compulsion. So, you know, it's not like I'm going to twist Bob or Dwayne's arm. Hey, come on, you guys, one of you needs to be an elder. And then you'd be compelled to do it. So to me, there's a difference between desiring the position, being compelled. That there could be a situation where a man recognizes, it's not really something I desire, but I understand that the church is in need of an elder or elders, and that I meet the qualifications, and I'm willing to serve, but I didn't necessarily desire the position. Willing, yeah, right, yeah. So, yeah. So it's a, I don't know. Maybe it's a little bit of semantics there, but yeah, willingness is certainly. I could agree with willingness.
I do think, though, that if you're not willing and you don't desire, you wouldn't be qualified.
Oh yeah.
You know what Mike was saying,
yeah.
I think you have to be willing.
Yeah.
Then
And maybe we're all just talking about the same thing.
It's a disqualifier, but not a qualifier.
Yeah, if you're not willing to do it, then you certainly can say no. I think it's interesting, the word there that's translated desire could be translated aspire, which it wouldn't be appropriate in that case. But it gives the idea that all these qualifications, when we look at these qualifications for both elders and deacons, really there's lots of these qualifications that all of us should aspire towards, regardless of whether we would meet. I mean, certainly not all Christians could be men, not all Christians could be husbands, not all Christians could be fathers or are fathers, but really, outside of those things, the rest of these are things that all of us should aspire to do.
Of course, that one way to look at that word desire or aspire, whichever way you want to call it, that comes from reaching out. That means reaching out.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, you have to be reaching out, trying to qualify yourself. So it has to be that.
Yeah, it's striving towards.
Striving toward, yeah.
Sure. Absolutely. Okay, so it's not been that long ago that we've studied this, so rather than go through each individual qualification, I think what I would rather do is highlight a few with the purpose of asking why. Why is it that an elder must be one of these qualifications? I think it's important that we establish that these are not suggestions. These are requirements. Verse 2, a bishop then must be. If we find an individual who meets all the qualifications but doesn't have children, well, we understand that they're not qualified for the position. Or some of the other things we'll talk about, we understand they're not qualified. These are requirements. So if we look at the qualifications, I don't know, we can break them down a hundred different ways. I look at them in four different sections. That of the person's family, of their character, their abilities, and then the things that are the negatives, the abstinences, the thing they're not supposed to be. So let's first start by talking about their family. And just remember, the purpose here, I just wanted to ask the question, why? Why is it that an elder must be one of these qualifications? So let's just start with verse 2, which is, must be the husband of one wife. Why must an elder be a husband of one wife? And so let's just start with, why must an elder be married? What's the purpose in that?
I think there's similarities between the relationship between a man and a woman and his family and an elder in the congregation that he's overseeing.
Okay. And what might, and I would agree, I'd describe it just a little bit different, but if we were thinking of a passage that might help us understand that, we'd probably go to Ephesians chapter 5. Because in Ephesians chapter 5, we have it's a conversation about husbands and wives. And let's look at verse 25 there, Ephesians 5, 25. Here it says, "Husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her." And we could really read a big section of chapter 5 and get the whole picture, but the idea there is that the relationship that a husband has with his wife is in lots of ways very similar to the relationship that Christ has with the church. And so an elder being married and being part of a husband and wife relationship understands what Christ wants out of the church. And so it helps him, being married, helps the elder take care of the church because he already knows how to take care of a wife. I think there's something else, too, just from a real practical perspective. Practically speaking, the church is going to be made up of, half or maybe more than half women, and having a wife helps the elder relate to women. And when I grew up, I think most of you know, I grew up in a household of men, and was my mom and dad, and then there were four of us boys, and our mom was there and around, but more so than maybe someone who had a sister, I didn't really understand women until I was married. There were just things about relating to women that I didn't. And maybe that's true of all men. I just think it's partially true in my situation because we never had women around other than my mom. And I don't know, there's just a different kind of relationship there. So having being married, I think, helps a man understand, relate to, at least better, women than what he would if he was not married. So I think there's just some practical things about it, too. He's going to have to relate to men, but he's also going to have to relate to women in the office of elder. So are there other comments about why an elder must be married? Yeah, yeah, in a lot of ways, the elder will be a model for other Christians, and so I think it would be important then to model what an appropriate behavior in families is. So yeah, good point. All right, well, let's talk about children. So 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 4. Mentions that you must have children. That's sort of the default comment there, but his children must be submissive. In Titus chapter 1, verse 6, it says children must be faithful. Now, what's very interesting is that this is one of the times where we haven't, Paul gives us the explanation. So when Paul tells Timothy in verse 4, one who rules his house well, having his children in submission with all reverence. So by default saying you must have children, but those children must be in submission with reverence. Verse 5, Paul answers the question that we're talking about this morning. Why is it that a man has to have children? And verse 5 tells us the answer. And what is that answer? Yeah. I mean, if you're not going to be able to manage your family, how do you expect to be able to manage the church? And a lot of the qualification, the reasons for these qualifications could point back to that. That if you can't do, if you're not faithful in little things, how can we expect you to be faithful in a big thing? And so here, verse 5 is the answer. For if a man does not know how to rule his own house, how will he take care of the church of God? So if your house isn't in order, if your house is a mess, how are you going to expect to be able to take care of the other people in the congregation whose houses might be in a mess? It comes to my mind about what Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, where he says, you know, if you see your brother with a plank in their eye, or a speck in their eye, make sure that the plank is out of your eye first. So get your house in order before you try to put other people's houses in order. So when talking about why they must have children, why they must be submissive and reverent, the answer, of course, is that it's a testing ground for how they're going to take care of the church. Other comments about that before we move on?
In a recent campaign, there was a comment that was made I thought was interesting. I had heard before that you can't fake good children.
Yeah.
And so kind of that concept of it's a training, it's a preparation for being an elder is that you need to practice, you need to be proven with the family.
Yeah, and having not been in that position as an elder, I wonder if serving as an elder is an awful lot like being a father all over again to newborn children. I don't know, but it seems that there may be some similarities, or at least Paul makes the connection that there's some similarities.
Maybe this is a loaded question, but asking elders, is it more difficult to be an elder or the head of your house, a father and a husband? Mm. And you may get different answers from different people.
Yeah, I'm not going to answer the question. Okay, anything else on family? Those are the things we have about his family, that he has to be married to one wife, which we didn't talk about, needs to have children. Those children need to be faithful, submissive, but the reasons why that he needs to have those things.
Ben, do you have a thought on the plurality of children?
Well, if I go to a restaurant and it says children eat free, and I only have one child, that child's going to eat free. I mean, I think in we understand that when I ask how many children do you have, and you say, "Well, I have one," well, that even though I'm speaking in the plurality, that we understand what the question is, and you can have children and have one child. I don't see that the issue is plurality as much as it is that to have a child or more. Are there benefits to an elder having multiple children? Sure, because you know you have multiple different lives, different personalities, different issues. So there certainly could be a benefit. I don't know that it would disqualify a man. I don't think it would if they just had a single child. Partly because of the reason. The reason is you have to manage them. You know, that's the proving ground. But anybody else have thoughts on that? That's sort of how I fall on it. All right, let's look at character. So the next category that we've got is character. Those are things like blameless, temperate, sober-minded, of good behavior. Titus calls that self-controlled, hospitable, gentle, a good testimony from other from non-Christians. Titus lists three other qualifications that could fall under character. That's a lover of what is good. That's Titus 1 and 8. Just, again, Titus 1 and 8, and then holy. So those are the character issues. Blameless, temperate, sober-minded, good behavior, hospitable, gentle, of good testimony, lover of what is good, just, and holy. Let's focus in on the very first one that, well, I guess it was the third one we mentioned, and that is a good testimony from non-Christians. Why would Paul, and he says it, to Timothy here, but why would Paul tell Timothy, or why is it that an elder needs to have a good testimony outside of the church? What's the issue there?
Well, it's really his character, I guess. I mean, if he is well reported out on the outside, there probably is a reason for that.
Matt, if your actions outside are going to bring reproach on the church,
Yeah, you used the right word there, and that's reproach. Let's look at verse 7, because verse 7, this is one that we also have the answer to. Moreover, he must have a good testimony among those who are outside, lest he fall into the reproach and the snare of the devil. Huh. What does that mean, lest he fall into the reproach and the snare of the devil?
His whole deal is to oppose Christ.
Yeah.
So if he can get you to do anything that's in opposition to what Christ wants you to do, you're going to be in reproach.
And we don't need to make it easier for outsiders to poke holes and, you know, oh, look how they act here.
So in lots of ways, this relates back to the very first qualification that's listed for an elder, and that is blameless. Well, it's blameless. That means that when accusations come, that they don't stick. And so here in verse 7, the answer is that lest he fall into the reproach and snare of the devil. That's the reason. We can look at how the Pharisees treated Jesus, and that's really the kinds of things that Satan would love to do for an elder of the church. Well, look, the elder of the church does X, Y, and Z. It brings reproach upon the church, makes it more difficult for the gospel to be spread. So I think that's a very excellent point. That's the reason why we have to have a good reputation for those outside. Now, it's very curious how we go about finding that out. Right? So when we go through the process of appointing elders, you know, lots of these other things we're going to be able to see as a congregation because of how the person behaves inside the church. But this one is one that we have to look outside. All right, other comments on that?
I think on that question along there that you're talking about, we meet people from day to day in our walks of life, and other people may not know that you know this particular person that they're talking about, but if you hear other people talking about this person that you're considering to be elder, you hear things from other people, and they don't even know you know.
Yeah.
You know, and that happens more than once, and things start kind of adding up. You're like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. All right, there's more we could talk about on character, but I want to get on to some other things. Let's talk about the person's abilities. And the abilities are, again, you could break this up a bunch of different ways, but the abilities include things like able to teach in verse 2, that they rule their house well. I sort of view that as an ability. That's verse 4. Not a novice. Again, even though that could be a negative thing, like, fall into the other category, I think it's an issue of ability. And then in Titus, we're also told that he has to hold fast to faithful words. So let's start with the issue of being able to teach. Why must an elder be able to teach?
To convince the gainsayer.
Ah, all right. So in Titus chapter 1, verse 9, really going back to this issue of being able to teach, Paul tells Titus in 1 and 9, holding fast the faithful words which he has been taught, that he may be able by sound doctrine both to exhort and convict those who contradict. So an elder has to be well versed in the scriptures. They have to be able to teach so that when a situation arises that someone teaches falsely, the elder can say, hold on, that is not the truth. So, certainly that's one reason. They have to be able to convict and exhort. What other reasons?
You know, like Paul told the Corinthians, or the Ephesian elders, you've got to feed. You've got to feed the flock.
Yeah.
I think that's maybe the number one thing.
Yeah, that's right.
So to feed means teach.
That's right, yeah. So, let's go to Ephesians. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 4. And I think Ephesians chapter 4 answers this question for us, why an elder has to be able to teach. Beginning in verse 11, and he gave himself some to be apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors and teachers. So before we read 12 through 14, what do we know of that pastors and teachers? That's one word that gets broken up, but literally means teaching pastors, and we know pastors is another word for elders, so it's almost as if it's just assumed that it's part of the job, because it is. So Jesus established apostles, prophets, evangelists, and elders. And why did he do that? Well, verse 12, for the equipping of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ, till we come to the unity of the faith and the knowledge of the Son of God, to a perfect man, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, that we should be no longer children, tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the trickery of men in the cunning craftiness of deceitful plotting. Whose responsibility is it that the church is edified? It's the elders. God makes it very clear. I think this is a place where some of our friends in the world get confused and think that, well, the man who stands up and teaches every Sunday, that man is the person who's responsible for feeding the flock. No, not so. The shepherd is responsible for feeding the flock. The elders are the ones who are responsible for making sure that teaching happens, and not just any kind of teaching, that right teaching happens. Here in Ephesians, the issue here is, I read verse 14 because all of this happens so that we're not tossed about by every wind of doctrine, so that the right teaching happens. And so that's the responsibility of the elders. Now, the elders might not be the only ones teaching, but ultimately they're responsible for the feeding of the flock.
That passage in Acts, the 20th chapter, that you read before, if you read another few verses down, the idea was that after my departure, savage wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock. And also from among yourselves, men will rise up speaking perverse things to draw away the disciples after themselves. So that's one of the main things.
Yeah.
Keep that from happening.
Yeah, so Eddie mentioned that one of the reasons why an elder needs to be able to teach is to convince those who contradict. And that's Titus chapter 1 and 9. And so what's mentioned there is holding fast faithful words. Well, what's the issue there? Well, elders are put into a position of authority. That's what Ephesians chapter 4 is talking about. When Paul says that Christ gave these things, well, those are the positions of authority within the church. And what do we know about authority and power? What can happen with power? Well, it corrupts, doesn't it? That's what happened. That's what Paul in Acts chapter 20 was telling the Ephesian elders, that power corrupts, and it's going to happen from among you. And so you got to be prepared for this. Get ready, because it's coming. So anyhow, that's part of the reason why they're to hold fast, why they're to be able to teach. They need to be well-versed in the Scriptures. All right. Let's look at one other ability, and that is to rule his house well. So here in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 4, one who rules his house well. And then verse 5 tells us that the reason why you need to be able to rule your house well is because it's sort of a testing ground. Because if you can't take care of your house, how are you going to take care of the church? And in Hebrews chapter 13, sort of to piggyback off of that, verse 17, the writer of Hebrews says this: "Obey those who rule over you and be submissive, for they watch out for your souls as those who must give an account. Let them do so with joy and not with grief, for that would be unprofitable for you." And so, again, maybe re-emphasizing something we'd mentioned before, but why do they need to be able to rule over their house well? Because in the end, what are they going to do? They're going to give an account for that house. So elders must be able to have their home in control so they can have the church in control, because then, in the end, you're watching out for their soul and you must give an account. All right, we're quickly running out of time. Let's look at verse 6, and that is not a novice. Here the Bible gives us the reason, but why is it that an elder can't be a novice?
Easy to get full of pride and think you're something, I guess.
Yeah, and by novice, we mean
a beginner.
Not a newborn babe in Christ. So, and the issue here is pride. It says, lest he be puffed up with pride and fall into the same condemnation of the devil. If we look at some passages, we don't have time, but in Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 28, we get the idea that what happened with Satan was that he was puffed up with pride. He thought he was something more than what he was. Now, he had a position that appears to be of some kind of authority, but yet he took it too far. And elders have to be careful. If they're novices, that risk runs high, that they not put themselves in a position of pride. All right. Let's look at the things that they need to abstain from. So in verse 3, they're abstain from wine, violence in verse 3. They're not to be quick-tempered. That's what Titus chapter 1, verse 7 says. And that's different, apparently different than violent. We might think, oh, well, quick-tempered and violent, those are really the same thing. Well, in Titus 1 and 7, it mentions that he's not to be violent, but then also mentions that he's not to be quick-tempered. So there's two separate issues there. So not given of wine, not violent, not quick-tempered, not greedy, that's verse 3, not quarrelsome, not covetous, not self-willed. So let's start with this issue of not greedy, verse 3. Why is it that an elder must not be greedy for money? Yeah, that sums it up pretty well. You know, there's all kinds of directions we could take from that. A person who is a lover of money, that, you know, maybe they're more susceptible to a bribe. Maybe they're more susceptible to, well, you know, brother so-and-so, they give a lot of money to the church, so we're going to make sure that their needs are met. There's a lot of problems that happen with the love of money, and that really is the best way to describe it. It's a root of all kinds of evil. All right. In Titus chapter 1, verse 7, it says that the elder must not be self-willed. And I find this really interesting because it's not mentioned here in Timothy, but it's mentioned in Titus, and then Peter also makes mention of this in 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 2 and 3, particularly verse 3. shepherd the flock of God which is among you, serving as overseers, not by compulsion, but willingly, not for dishonest gain, but eagerly, nor as being lords over over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. An elder can't be self-willed, in other words, making decisions based on their own interests. They have to make decisions based on the interests of the church. And I think of situations that I had two grandfathers who were elders, and one of my grandfathers had to disfellowship his own son. And I wonder what that must have been like. And I think of this situation, because from a father, certainly he wouldn't want to do that to his son, but in the end, it had to happen. And so he made the decision that was in the best interest of the church, not necessarily in the best interest of himself. All right. Yeah, and so that was the point Peter was making. He said, not as lords over them, right? Because, you know, the elders. Yeah, and it's not a dictatorship. It's not a democracy, right? It's Christ is the head of the church. The elder is an overseer. They're the person who's the stand-in. It's Christ's church. And so you're making decisions not based on your will, but it should be on Christ's will. All right, I know we went through those qualifications quickly. Again, it was not my intention to go through each individual one, but rather to kind of hit some highlights. Next week, we'll pick up in verse 8. We'll make it through the end of the chapter, but you might be looking at deacons. And so we are going to try to write up on the board the qualifications for deacons, so maybe study ahead or something. All right, let's take a short break.